Welcome. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. Today we have a special and exciting program. We're going to be speaking with Les Jamieson, a 911 activist, and Diane Rourke, an American whistleblower, about the new Oliver Stone's documentary, A Good American, depicting 911, how 911 should have been prevented, and how events were used as a launch pad for unconstitutional invasion of everyone's privacy. So we're all concerned about privacy. And let me introduce our first guest, and that is Les Jamieson. He studied the alternative research into 911 since November of 2001, just 2 months after the attack. He has been publicly active as an event organizer, street activist, and movement builder since January of 2004. Beginning October 2014, Les spearheaded an effort to generate grassroots support for legislation to declassify 28 pages from the Congressional Joint Inquiry on 9/11. As well as mobilize public support for the passage of the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. Les organized a recent 9/11 anniversary event in Foley Square called From 911 Truth to 911 Justice. Les has chaired educational panels on 9/11 and the 28 pages at the Left Forum from 2015 through 2017. Les is currently on board of the 9/11 Truth Action Project, working to mobilize activists, calling for a 9/11 informed Congress. And as part of today's program, we're also going to be speaking about a film showing that's going to be taking place Sunday.
Yes, Kathy, thank you so much for having me. This film showing that you are referring to is Sunday, November the 12th at Symphony Space in Manhattan at 4 p.m. We will be showing the exclusive film screening. When I say exclusive, this is the first time it's been shown publicly within the U.S., an Oliver Stone documentary called A Good American, which is about the whistleblowing experience of an NSA high-level cryptologist, codebreaker by the name of William Binney, and the whole experience of what he encountered in what amounted to an incredible obstruction of his program that would have prevented 9/11. And instead, what we were subjected to after the attacks occurred was a rollout of an NSA program that went far beyond his software called Thin Thread, and instead did total bulk data collection of everybody without any warrant and what amounts to an unconstitutional invasion of privacy. That's what this film is about. And William Binney himself will be here, along with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern and another whistleblower who's in the film, who we'll be speaking to shortly. Her name is Diane Rourke, and it'll be moderated by Sean Stone, son of Oliver Stone. So this is an incredible cast, and we hope you'll get the word out. Hope you'll come to the theater, and I will give a website and a few phone numbers. Mm-hmm. If you can grab a pen and paper, you can get all the details at symphonyspace.org. Okay, that's the website, or you could call the box office at 212-864-5400. By the way, the theater is at 95th and Broadway. You could also go there. And one more phone number that has this is the hotline with all the details, 347-282-2329.
Excellent. And we'll give that information out again a couple of times for people to be able to jot it down if they didn't already. So everyone get your pens handy because this is a special event you won't want to miss. You really won't want to miss this. So give us the bigger picture here in terms of the 9/11 event, because a lot of people still refer to this as some kind of crazy conspiracy theory. And I know that you have gone so deep down this rabbit hole that you really can give some details of what this is all about. And how important is it that you have these whistleblowers who have real data?
Well, the notion that questioning the various details about 9/11 as being a conspiracy theory, I think it's just for lack of taking some time to look at the research and the facts, and also the incredibly credentialed individuals from all kinds of professional backgrounds who have done the research. There are many excellent books, and documentaries, and websites that really go into the total analysis of the events and the timeline of the events, the individuals in power at that time, and also the history of false flag events is very important, because to really truly understand 9/11, it will take us into a study of our history of wars and of military policies. Also, if anybody just looks into the research of an organization called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, that website is ae911.org. You'll see the incredible peer-reviewed analysis of the physical evidence of what happened here in New York at Ground Zero with the collapses of three towers, not two, but three towers, including one that wasn't even hit by an airplane. That's Building 7 that collapsed in 6.5 seconds in a virtual free fall, which has never been adequately explained. So and what we're going to discuss today, Catherine, is another aspect of 9/11, which is what we could call as a category, the agenda behind intelligence policies prior to 9/11 and after 9/11, the anomalies in terms of the political and the political aspects of 9/11 that will really question what happened in terms of the Bush administration and key people such as John Ashcroft at the time, George Tenet, Robert Mueller, who's now in the public eye again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so this is all fact-based. And the other very, very obvious reason why this is so far beyond anything that could be called conspiracy theory is because the whistleblowing actions of Edward Snowden, which has become so widely known, is all an aftermath of the whistleblowing of William Binney and Diane Rourke.
And, okay. Yeah. So there's a direct connection that we're going to be hearing about. Well, this is really interesting to me because, I mean, I was here in New York when the towers came down, and the whole experience was very suspicious. Just the length of the fires to me was very suspicious. But I think for me, the greatest proof is the state of the world today.
Yeah.
It's like, how could this possibly happen? And when we look at the countries in the Middle East, the devastation is all a chain link to that consequence of the September 11th event. So for me, I look at the consequence and I say, okay, these things didn't happen by accident. And if you just trace it all back, it'll take you back to that core event. So for me, that's all. That's really the proof that convinces me at this stage of the game.
Perfectly said, Catherine. And just to add background in detail to what you're referring to in terms of the last 16 years and the perpetual wars that we have encountered. There was an organization called Project for a New American Century. They put out a document 1 year before, a white paper called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they describe the objective to create complete military dominance on the planet. They called it full-spectrum dominance, and they said that the American people would not support such an agenda absent a catastrophic catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Now, and one more piece of information. In the days after the 9/11 attacks, General Wesley Clark visited the Pentagon, and he ran into a general that he knew from the Balkans War roughly 10, 12 years earlier. And he was informed by this individual that there were pre-existing plans to invade 7 countries in the Middle East. And within 5 years, okay, all of those countries have been invaded. Although Iran is the only one, there hasn't been an over invasion. Although, according to Scott Ritter, there has been special forces covert operations in Iran. But all the other countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, these are some of the major ones that we know about that we have indulged in these military adventures there. And so this is all come out to be very clearly, as you say, like a chain link to violence, as well as events like the Patriot Act, National Defense Authorization Act, Military Commissions Act. Also, 9/11 events created what the government calls a state of emergency, in which they then use a war platform. When we're at war, the government sees itself above the Constitution. We saw this in World War II with the internment of domestic populations of Japanese. That was a subversion of the Constitution because of the war emergency at the time. Same thing with 9/11. In addition to launching the full-blown surveillance, which is a complete invasion of privacy and civil liberties, also was the implementation of torture policies. Yeah. This is all based on the platform of 9/11 to, quote, legitimize their policies of torture, which and rendition and all those things that were horrific and that were crimes of war based on the Nuremberg principles.
Wow. Well, I would like to introduce our second guest. She is standing by. And we're being joined by Diane Rourke, is an American whistleblower who served as a Republican staffer on the House Intelligence Committee from 1985 to 2002. She was right after 9/11, the House Intelligence Committee staffer in charge of oversight of the NSA, along with William Binney, Ed Lunis, and J. Kirk Levy. She filed a complaint to the Department of Defense Inspector General about the National Security Agency's highly classified Trailblazer project, according to investigative journalist James Risen. She was perhaps the most courageous whistleblower of the post-9/11 era, and yet her story has never been fully told. So welcome, Diane. We're here, myself, Catherine, and Les. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Good morning. Good morning, Diane. Well, this is a very special event an opportunity to have you tell your story and message and the importance of it to the world, basically. And earlier, we also described the fact that we're having a very special event this coming Sunday where you will be personally appearing. So that's very special as well. Now, I really, really had an incredible time researching the events that you were involved in with the exposure of William Binney's whistleblowing and your whistleblowing. And let's get right into some of these questions, because the audience here on Heart of Mind Radio is going to really be very, very much enriched by this discussion.
I agree.
So, Diane, first of all, when William Binney first came to you, this was after the 9/11 attacks, I believe, in a situation where there were hearings going on about the NSA. Is that correct? If not, please fill us in on the circumstances of William Binney coming to you and what the outcome was.
Bill came to me in mid-February of 2002 and told me about the domestic surveillance of the U.S. population. I immediately went to my superiors on the House Intelligence Committee on both the Republican and Democratic sides to warn them about it, and I sent a series of memos thereafter fully explaining it and giving them updates. In all of this, in all of my efforts, I recommended that the program be killed, but if they couldn't get it killed, that at the very minimum, they restore the protections that had been built into the program but had been deactivated. And that included triple encryption of U.S. identities until a warrant could be obtained, and there were no warrants in this program. They were just tracking everybody. And the second thing was automated tracking of anybody getting into the database, so that if somebody did something improper, there would be evidence. And so I went on a committee initially. It turns out that the two leading persons on the committee, Porter Goss and Nancy Pelosi, had apparently already approved it, had been going along with it. And so I continued to try to persuade them. And then I went to people in the executive branch whom I ascertained had been cleared into the program. Some of them would meet with me and some of them would not. For instance, I met twice with Michael Hayden, then the director of NSA, about it. And I also tried to go to the judicial branch when I was not getting anywhere. I tried to go to Chief Justice Rehnquist through somebody who knew somebody. That was unsuccessful. I tried to go to the head of the FISA court, and she refused to meet with me.
This is very intriguing in that your attempts to inform those of the chain of command and then also in the judicial branch was met with basically silence in deaf ears, it sounds like. So that's very important to know. And what you were trying to inform Michael Hayden about, and Nancy Pelosi, Porter Goss, Judge Rehnquist, and the FISA court, was that the NSA program at this point, after 9/11, 2002, was doing what beyond what normal surveillance should be in serving the cause for national security. It was doing warrantless spying on basically everybody?
Yes, everybody in the United States. It was collecting on everybody in the United States, and it was unconstitutional. The Fourth Amendment protects us from that, and from unlawful search and seizure of private papers and communications. And it had, NSA supposedly prior to that had been scrupulously observing it, and everybody in the agency was annually briefed on their legal obligations under both the Constitution and the FISA law and other laws pertaining to electronic surveillance. It was not allowed to collect on anybody in the United States unless they had a warrant.
Now, at this point, just to contrast what you just described with the this program, which I believe was called Stellar Wind, is that correct?
That's correct. That's the overall name for it. There are a lot of there were a lot of programs under it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to contrast it, I want to make sure that the audience understands William Binney's program called Thin Thread, what he designed and what it was intended to do, and then please describe the resistance and obstruction that he encountered.
Well, William Binney and Ed Loomis had created a program to modernize NSA and put it in the digital age. NSA had fallen way behind the technology, and so this was a program to help them get into the digital age, and also in very important to deal with the massive flood of information that came over fiber optic lines. Everybody was going to, you know, this was the start of a huge amount of emails. It was, and eventually also cell phones, and, you know, communication simply exploded. And they were being transmitted at the speed of light over fiber optic lines instead of the old copper lines. So this was a huge challenge, and NSA was way behind. And they floundered in trying to plan for a new digital system. And Bill and Ed came up with a new system that was extremely innovative, and it was designed, this thin thread system was designed to neck down the amount of information to a manageable amount that the analysts could deal with. That's very important because flooding the NSA and others with the communications of everybody in the United States and everybody in the world almost is counterproductive.
Right. It was impossible to take that volume of data and actually learn anything from it. So,
yes, and I think that's illustrated by the results of when they took part of this technology and combined it with other technology and started collecting on everybody, including, as Edward Snowden revealed in 2013, they were collecting every communication in six countries and almost a seventh that was pending. So that was back in 2013. So it's not just the United States they were collecting every single communication on. It was other countries as well. And you know, we have no legitimate interest in the private communications of people who are not even in foreign governments or have anything to do with terrorism. So it was just clogging up everything. And the results are, you know, in the United States, they show this program was designed and defended as a means of getting a critical first tip-off, especially on the so-called lone wolf terrorist. And it hasn't done that a single time. And yet the administration keeps arguing that it's essential.
So Thin Thread, the software that William Binney and Ed Loomis designed, by the way, at a cost of what would have been $9.5 million, was capable of stunning patterns of data. And the objective then is once a pattern was detected that caused suspicion, then immediately and automatically, without the need for human interaction and human error, it automatically notified all the relevant agencies. And 3 weeks before 9/11, I believe it was, the story here is FinThread was blocked from being implemented. And what I find absolutely mind-boggling is there was information about a 9/11-style attack that was found in 1995 in the Philippines. It was called Operation Bojinka. Then the year before 9/11, starting early in the year, and then throughout the spring and summer, there was knowledge of two individuals, Khalid Almidar and Nawaf al-Hamzi in San Diego, that were part of the plot, part of the operation. And then we had people like Richard Clark, George Tenet, detecting all these signals here and alarms. And they were running around and trying to inform up the chain of command. It was all met with silence and deaf ears. We had FBI agents in the field, such as Colleen Rowley, Robert Wright, and Harry Sammet, detecting suspicious activity in flight schools, trying to warn their superiors. There was a flood of information. There were also warnings from 11 foreign countries, including intelligence agencies. This is all in the months prior to 9/11. Now, with all of that, it just seems incredulous that the NSA would not be doing everything it could and utilizing exactly what FinThread was capable of accomplishing.
Yes, it was difficult to believe. Actually, a lot of the intelligence agencies were trying in the post-Soviet period to justify their budgets by going to counter-narcotics and counter-terrorism. And arguing that their budget should be supplemented for those reasons and that they were shifting resources to them. But it was, as you said, a kind of a comedy of errors. There were plenty of warnings. And as Tom Drake later found out when he used Bill's data analysis system against the main database at NSA, after the attack, he found out that all this information and far more was in the database. But again, it was a problem already, even then, before they vastly expanded collection, was that they couldn't find the nuggets of intelligence in what they had.
And when Thomas Drake went back using FinThread to analyze the data that was in the database prior to 9/11, he detected the operation, the 9/11 plot.
This is discussed in the movie, in which is going to be playing on Sunday. They discuss all that, and so it was so embarrassing and humiliating and showing incompetence that NSA buried the entire thing so that nobody would know.
Mm-hmm. So. What you just described sounds to me, would you call this a cover-up?
Yes, definitely. It was a cover-up.
That's very important, folks, because with 9/11, there are so many aspects to it that researchers have looked into, including, by the way, the work of the Joint Inquiry on 9/11 and the official 9/11 Commission. And there's so much that we can attribute to cover up and whitewash. And here is another aspect of 9/11, which we've just heard can be described as a cover up, which is what the NSA did to block the use of FinThread, William Binney's data analysis program, that, by the way, just to reiterate, was able to conduct surveillance without invading privacy because of triple levels of encryption. And instead, the attacks did occur because of the inability of the NSA at that point, again, with all the myriad of warnings for so long, and they could have detected and prevented the 9/11 attacks. This is very important to be clear on. And as Diane Rourke just described, these events have been covered up all these years. And this is why the film A Good American is so important. And this interview is so important as we continue to get a deeper understanding of the events of 9/11 so that we can get a deeper understanding of all the world events that have transpired since, as well as what is occurring right now in terms of our military engagements across the world and the state of civil liberties here in America today, which we'll discuss more in a minute.
Yes. This is Catherine. As I was listening to the both of you talking, I had two thoughts, and it may not be relevant in this conversation, but I want to put it out there to see what you might think of that. And even though this thin thread was circumvented, and it is true that it would have found so many of these different events that were leading up to 9/11, is it possible that some of these events themselves were false to mislead the NSA? Does that make sense?
There are a lot of attempts to confuse intelligence agencies, but these were like, for instance, the Philippine incident that was referred to. This was a prior attack attempt to attack for a terrorist attack using airplanes, and the United States got the information from the Philippines. We were warned that the terrorists were considering that that technique. It happened that they were able to foil the attack in Asia, but we paid no attention to it. And NSA, and for its part, NSA had no urgency in trying to address the terrorist problem with new technology. In fact, they consistently tried to delay the thin thread development itself and then refused to use it.
Then, well, William Binney, as we know, after the attacks, when he saw what was happening with the obstruction of thin thread and then the implementation of a much costlier program, which was, as you saw, going to be ineffectual because they were trying to layer new digital technology on top of the old analog technology, and told them it never would work. Bill Binney had to leave. He resigned right in 2001 as a result of all these occurrences.
Yes, Bill and Kirk and Ed, after they were notified that thin thread was going to be killed, they all had there was a retirement offer at that time, and they all decided that they would take it. However, after 9/11, Bill and others, they all felt they should rise to the occasion and help the country, but then and so they considered not retiring. But then when they found out what was going on, that the whole country was being surveilled, they just went ahead and retired.
Interesting. And but you continue to be active in trying to basically become a whistleblower to warn the agencies and up the chain of command. And I just want to touch on that again. I'm particularly intrigued by your experience of meeting with Michael Hadley, who was NSA
Michael
director.
Hayden. Mm-hmm.
Michael Hayden, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And who, by the way, we know Michael Hayden has been one of the regular guests in the media in the last few years, so he's very active still in public life. Michael Hayden, when you met with him on two occasions, and you tried to warn him what could happen if the public discovered the unconstitutionality of the NSA full-blown spying program on everyone that was indiscriminate, and he told you, I guess, reluctantly, in frustration, we did it because we have the power.
Yes, what I was pushing in particular, I said the program should not exist at all, but I did not understand in particular why they took the protections off for the American people, because they could have used the encryption and the database surveillance, surveilling who was using the database and how. They could have used that to protect Americans, and still, when they had enough information that somebody was in contact with a known terrorist, they could have gotten a warrant and done the whole thing legally, and it could have been expedited, and there was not a problem with timelines like they are now claiming. But he just basically, so when I pushed him on why the protections had been taken off, he didn't have an answer, and I had to ask repeatedly, and finally he just said we had the power. And what he was referring to was that they were invoking commander-in-chief powers in wartime, and that all depended on that congressional resolution after the attack, which was not a declaration of war, but did say that the administration could go after the attackers, which, of course, was one particular terrorist group. Now we're using it against every terrorist group abroad, plus the so-called lone wolf. Mm-hmm. And it is, and so technically, I think you could say they could not. I think there's probably a legal case that they are that they don't have the right to use these powers, even if they hadn't stretched them as far as they could.
Well, I think we can make the distinction of the fact that any activities that look like there were plans in shape for acts of violence is something what the intelligence services are supposed to be pursuing. However, the real issue here is those or that particular objective has failed ever since 9/11 in terms of detecting plots for acts of violence. They have failed, and including the one that just happened in Manhattan 2 weeks ago. There was, as it turns out, a lot of activity that this criminal had in terms of visiting ISIS websites, spending hours and hours, and also it was found that he downloaded hundreds of ISIS videos on his computer. So this is something I asked Bill Binney about. He said, absolutely, that would have been detected had Thin Thread been used. So getting back to the...
I think they probably are collecting on that. I mean, that's the most obvious place in the world to collect. But again, I think it's that there's a deluge of other information, and they just don't... they just can't pay attention to the things that are most important, because they're collecting all this unimportant stuff that has no relationship.
Right, right. I think I read that something like billions of records a day just on cell phones are being collected, which includes the cell phone records of millions of people within the United States that have nothing to do with terrorism. And so next, I just want to touch on what happened to you and the others here, William Binney, Ed Loomis, Thomas Drake, as a result of your efforts to expose what you found about the NSA and their obstruction of Thin Thread, and then their launching of this full-blown surveillance. There was retaliation that occurred. Would you like to describe a little bit of this?
Yes, there was massive retaliation against us. Well, first of all, one of the things that happened was that the Inspector General of the Department of Defense turned our names over to the FBI illegally because we had asked for a fraud, waste, and abuse investigation of the National Security Agency in regard to the Trailblazer versus Thin Thread issue. And so he turned our names over, which he wasn't supposed to do. And then he had apparently destroyed all the documentation showing that Tom Drake had helped them from inside NSA because he was still employed there to find all the information that NSA was hiding from the IG. Anyway, so that's the first thing. Our names were turned over to them. I was apparently the prime target because I had talked to so many people about my opposition to it, to the program. And so apparently they concentrated on me and then looked at who I was communicating with, which was the other four of these people, Bill Binney, Ed Loomis, Tom Drake, and Kirk Wiebe. And so we all got in their sights, and they interviewed us. I voluntarily talked to them for 3 hours. I thought they were appeased, and they seemed to be satisfied. And then in July of 2007, we were raided. And this was all because the New York Times had published information on the surveillance in December of 2005, and Jim Risen, one of those reporters, had published a book in January of 2006. And a massive investigation followed with a great deal of pressure from the White House to find the leaker. And apparently I was one of the prime targets, and then these other people became targets because they were communicating with me. And the techniques that were used against us were ruthless, just ruthless. They falsified evidence to try to get Tom and I, whom they narrowed it down to eventually. They tried to get Tom and I to plea bargain. In his case, they falsified the classification of unclassified documents, IG documents that he had. Documents he had given to the IG that were unclassified that they had told him to keep in his house. And they retroactively classified those. They found five that they classified, and then they charged him with five felonies for that, plus five other charges for allegedly obstructing the investigation by doing regular, normal deletions from his computer. And with me, they claimed that in my three-hour interview, I had perjured myself. And they cited a passage, and it had been 2.5 years at that point since the three-hour interview. And apparently they were hoping I would forget. But I told my attorney, that's an accurate quote, but it was about a different topic. It was about a different news article. And so they used... So they basically lie to get you to plea bargain, and they set you up. It's completely, I think this whole plea bargain system has become corrupted. And then they use other intimidation tactics, and including trying to leverage your family against you, trying to break up your family. In my case, and that was in Tom's case, and in my case, they subpoenaed one of my sons, to appear before a grand jury to testify against me. And then they kept dragging it out for a long time. It didn't ever happen, but that was used to leverage me. And eventually, when they couldn't prove anything, and they indicted Tom and then backed off 4 days before the trial when he kept refusing to plea bargain, which the judge found very suspicious. And they leaked a document that we were going to be all prosecuted for conspiracy, all five of us. They raided us, and they raided Bill at gunpoint. It just goes on and on. So then we all still had clearances because of other activities we're involved in, and they had, of course, revoked those during the investigation, and they refused to return them. So after we were cleared, and so nobody was able to work in their chosen field.
Mm-hmm. Now, what you just described, Diane, is absolutely chilling, and it's just unimaginable what you all had to go through. This is unbelievably destabilizing of one's life and upsetting. And then what your future prospects are in terms of losing your capability to continue your line of work. They definitely had an intention to create real havoc in your lives, no doubt. Well, this is why, by the way, what we just heard also inspired and informed and inspired Edward Snowden in the actions that he took when he decided to blow the whistle. He knew that he would have to go independent and go direct to the public, having known the experience of William Binney, Ed Loomis, Diane Rourke, and Thomas Drake.
We all took the proper route and went inside and spoke to people who were cleared to receive the information. And that showed, they claim that whistleblowers will be protected. They will not be protected. They will be targeted.
Exactly. We've seen this again and again, and it's gotten a lot worse.
I did have a question, because I know that at this point you indeed are a whistleblower and you're continuing to put the information out there, but it strikes me that in the actual occurrence of these events, you are just simply operating with integrity. And it's almost as if part of this need to subject you to these kinds of treatments was to prevent other people to create fear in other people in these agencies who might have wanted to tell the truth. So I was wondering if you could respond to that, how the attack of your work and other people's work, how that degenerated the NSA and the military departments that may at one point have had a great deal of integrity.
Absolutely. I think that's a very important lesson that you hit on. That this was obviously one of their main goals. In the end, I don't think they cared whether we were innocent or guilty. They just wanted a scalp to hang. They wanted to ruin somebody's life and to hold them up as an example to anybody else who might feel that there were illegal things going on and try to report them. And that's very obvious. And what they have done since then in the intelligence agencies, everybody is monitored closely. They are repeatedly investigated. The people who work with them are told they're to report on them, and if they don't report on them, that they too will come under suspicion and be in trouble if it turns out they were a leaker. It has become a draconian system of oversight of their own employees.
Folks, this is Les Jamieson with Catherine Davis here on Heart of Mind Radio, interviewing Diane Rourke. And Diane will be with us here in New York City this coming Sunday, November the 12th, 4 p.m. at Symphony Space, 95th and Broadway, for an exclusive screening of the Oliver Stone documentary, A Good American, which has phenomenal interviews with both William Binney, Diane Rourke, Kirk Wiebe, and Thomas Drake. You don't want to miss this event, like Catherine said earlier. You really don't. And William Binney, Ray McGovern, Diane Rourke.
And in case there's somebody in the world who doesn't know who Ray McGovern is, yes. Tell a little bit about who he is.
Sure. Ray McGovern is a former analyst at the CIA who spent many years also working in the area creating the presidential daily briefs. And later, after leaving the service, he came out as an anti-war activist and working very hard also with people like William Binney and Diane Rourke to expose the violations of constitutional principles here, like we're speaking about today. And he is co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. That's Ray McGovern. He's incredible. He'll be with us as well. Again, Sunday, please come. And for ticket information, folks, you can either go to symphonyspace.org or call 212-864-5400. That's the box office. Or for the hotline with all the details, call 347-282-2329. I'll repeat, 347-282-2329.
And again, it's on Sunday at 4?
Correct.
Okay, so we want people to really make their way to the theater and see this film. It's an exclusive screening followed by a panel, and you're going to learn a lot. And you're going to begin to understand why your life is the way it is right now. And that's kind of a question. We're just about out of time. But what thoughts do both of you have on the implications of all of this and all of the surveillance of the American people? Are we now prisoners inside the borders of this country?
I have very serious concerns about the effect on our democracy, and Americans seem to think that they are special in the world and their institutions can never fail. But our institution, this has greatly undermined our institutions. First of all, the presidency, the executive branch with the intelligence agencies is becoming extremely powerful, way too powerful for the courts and the legislature to control. And the legislature itself is a huge disappointment in that the intelligence committees that were established to stop this have become not just complicit in it, but actually fans of it. The whole thing has been turned on its head, and I'm very concerned that the administration can basically look up any one of us they want in their massive holdings and know everything about us and how they can leverage against us if we do something they don't like.
Diane, do you think that there are members in Congress who know of this power, this inordinate power that's being wielded from the top, and actually are fearful of rising up and taking action to help keep it in check and restore it to its proper dimensions? Do you feel that there are people already there who would want to do the right thing and but fear challenges?
I would have to anticipate there have been some such cases, because all of us, you know, people like to tell me that, you know, I don't have anything to hide. They can look at everything I have. It's not that you have done something wrong. It's that everybody in their life has troubles. Everybody in their life has people and things that they cherish that could be used as levers against them. It's just all of us are vulnerable.
All the more importance why this information needs to be fully reviewed, mm-hmm. as we informed ourselves, like the audience and Heart of Mind Radio and Progressive Radio Network. This is about turning powerful knowledge into powerful action.
Absolutely. And I have a lot of curiosity about these things, and I don't know if it's relevant, but is all of this massive surveillance I mean, this is just sort of a maybe a projection on part my part, have something to do with the advent of artificial intelligence and being able to have the computers to process all this information in a way that will create a massive entity of control? Does that make any
sense? Oh, yes, absolutely. Artificial intelligence at the moment, you know, we are actually lucky that they can't process all this stuff because then we would really be at risk. Maybe they're missing some terrorists, but at least they haven't, you know, been able to make this into a thing where every single person is at risk. But yes, artificial intelligence, some of the things that really bother me are facial recognition The intelligence agencies are openly surveying Facebook, collecting facial identities for future use with facial recognition technology. The Chinese are already using it to impose good conduct on their populace. Like if you jaywalk, your face, you know, your name may flash up immediately as a jaywalker, and they deduct points from your social index, and that depends, and that will be used to give you either privileges, like getting into the right school or getting the right job, or to make life miserable for you.
Diane, this has been invaluable. Thank you so much. We look forward to seeing you on Sunday, and The listeners of Heart of Mind Radio, I think, will be enriched. I want to thank Catherine Davis for the opportunity to share this vital information. At this point in time, we are all very much in debt to you and the others we mentioned here for bringing this incredibly important information out to the public. Diane, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Excellent. So we're just about out of time. And we'll cover this again. We'll be happy to do this again. All right. So I just want to thank all of you for joining us. You've been listening to Heart of Mind Radio. And this is the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And we will be back again on Saturday at 6 p.m. Next week. So I invite you to join us. And you can always check our webpage on prn.fm. And that for more great programming over the Progressive Radio Network. And bye. For-
Bells in a cell, jewels held in the kingdom, and snows on the run with a trip of the tongue. We have to keep that whistle blowing, telling and showing you what's going on.
See you.